We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Greatest song ever written, I'm just saying. Hello, St. Louis and surrounding areas. You are listening to another edition of At Your Service, heard right here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Dave Simons, live in the KMOX studios, visiting with you tonight. And happy to be here, certified financial planner by day and the occasional fill-in guest host by night. All right. So, what do you think the odds are on any particular Friday or Saturday night that you can just show up at a halfway decent restaurant, and especially a nicer restaurant, and just expect you're going to get right in there and sit down and be seated at 6:30 in the evening? Huh? Have you tried that? Good luck. It just doesn't happen anymore. That's where we are in the economy. I know that people sit there and scratch their heads and just say, where's all this money coming from? Haven't the stimulus checks stopped? Yeah, they did. And studies show that pretty much all that's been spent. But this economy continues to roll along, and the data not only supports it, but all this anecdotal evidence, too, just like the aforementioned restaurants always busy. How about another one? How many of you have been to an airport lately or gotten onto an airplane and flown anywhere? I fly quite a bit, you know, not like I'm a traveling salesperson and I'm flying every week, but I'm in the air probably a couple of times a month, including this past week. In fact, I just got back from Philadelphia on Sunday. When I stepped off the plane out into Lambert on Sunday, what time was that? Early afternoon, 1 or 2 o'clock or so. I can honestly tell you, I don't recall the last time that good old Lambert International Airport was that crowded. It looked like I was at LaGuardia or Newark or someplace like that, Atlanta, or how St. Louis used to be decades ago when we were like the 7th busiest airport in the country. I mean, it was amazing how crowded it was. Now, granted, this was on a Sunday on the tail end of a lot of people's spring break vacations. But I've traveled during March the last number of years, and I was telling that story to a colleague of mine just yesterday, and he said the same thing, that he had traveled 2 weeks prior, so more in the early to middle part of March, and he told his wife the same exact thing. Wow, I don't recall Lambert looking this crowded, and they go out on spring break all the time. So this is an important issue, because this is a political campaign year. And the number one issue typically for most people is the economy. Now, I'm not going to dig into that. I've talked about it before. It's a very interesting argument for the current incumbent president, Joe Biden, and his administration. On the one hand, they can say, look, the economy's rocking and rolling right along better than most people thought. In fact, everyone thought the Fed would already be cutting rates. They're not, because the economy is doing so well. There is truth to that. But then there's the other side that they can't shake, and it's the legacy of the inflation picture and the cumulative effect of it. And it happened on their watch. People can argue whether or not a president deserves credit or blame on any particular issue. But the inflation happened under his watch, and rightly or wrongly, he is going to be tagged with that. So somehow that administration has to navigate its way through in campaigns. And if there is a debate, how do they shake that? I don't know. Glad I'm not part of the Biden administration trying to figure that out. So the economy, number one, but it's working and it's happening. Number two is immigration, of course. I shouldn't say of course, because immigration typically is not number two. It's usually a top five, six, something like that. But based on what we've seen in this country here in the last year or two, that's number two. Now, that would be an issue that would go against the incumbent president, you would think. And then you have third, crime. According to every study, every poll that I've seen, those are your top three. Yes, there are other important issues, but those are the three biggies. Now, just so happened to be, when I was in Philadelphia, I was thinking a lot about our country. How can you not, when you are at one of the center points of the formation of this great country? I am a history zealot. I'm an American history buff. I could show you my library, and half the many hundreds and hundreds of books are related to American history, and typically during the Revolutionary period. In fact, I just finished two nights ago the newest book on John Hancock. By the way, when you ask somebody, the typical American, and just say, what do you know about John Hancock? What's the first thing they're going to say? The signature. Hey, and it's just become almost a reference point when you sign something. Put your John Hancock right here. And of course, we know the current version of John Hancock, don't we? Hancock and Kelly, right? John Hancock. No, not that John Hancock. I'm talking about one of the founding fathers way back when. What, I don't know why this was never really taught in school. I don't remember ever being taught much about John Hancock, but do you know, if you read enough American history, you realize that two of the most essential people in the formation of this country were Samuel Adams and John Hancock. We all know about George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, a number of other names, John Adams, but you don't hear as much about the importance of a Hancock or an Adams. John Hancock, could be argued that he was actually really our first president. Before we actually had George Washington, while he was fighting off the British, we had, of course, the Continental Congress, and we had the Articles of Confederation, and we had a president during the war, and that president was the aforementioned John Hancock. So it was great. When I knew I was going to Philadelphia, I made sure that I got a hotel right there next to or nearby Independence Hall, where the Articles of Confederation were written, where the original and early drafts of the Declaration of Independence were written. So Boston and Philadelphia, man, were the two centerpieces. By the way, John Hancock was from Boston, might have been the wealthiest person in Boston. Inherited it, pretty much, due to death and some family dysfunction. He was given away to his very rich uncle in Boston, and his uncle died young. So here's John Hancock inheriting all this money as a young man. So kind of winning the Powerball of his day, but I digress. So as I'm being reminded of the greatness of this country, here's the thing that came to me and I was reminded of, and all of you should really recognize this if you haven't before. There seems to be an inevitability that this was going to play out, that somehow the Americans were going to defeat the British. And then after that, everybody was going to get along, all 13 colonies, come up with a central government, come up with the Declaration of Independence, determine all the laws that were needed to put together Congress and how to vote them in. And all these things were going to come together. And we look back and go, it worked out perfectly. You go back in time, if you could, and you talk to any of the people who lived back then, 250 some years ago, and you realize the odds of all that happening were slim. They just were. There was no inevitability. Many times, George Washington in his writings would say, we're losing this war. This is a lost cause. Meanwhile, politicians back home were having to move around because of the fear of the British all the time. And then when they finally did win, to get the 13 colonies to even agree on a central government, that wasn't going to happen either. We just know that we have a government, a federal government. Many of the founding fathers didn't want that. Many of them said, we want states' rights to be the most important. And it's, you are reminded of that, that this great experiment, really, there is no reason for it to have happened, but it happened. And I'm so thankful of it. All right, that's a really nice way to start. This speech should have been, I guess I should have saved for like July 4th or something. But just being in Philadelphia, I couldn't help it. Now, there's a reason I even tell you this story. Because it's related to a story that was breaking in New York City at the time that I was in Philadelphia. And it's heart-wrenching and it's heartbreaking. And it goes against one of the main tenets of the founding of this country. And I want to explain what that is when we come back, because if that is diminished in this country, then we have a lot of problems. So let's address that when we come back. And I've got so much more on tonight's edition of At Your Service. Stay with us.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back. You are listening to At Your Service. Dave Simon's in tonight and loving every minute of it. All right, so we're talking a little bit about the founding of our country, just because I was in Philly and was reminded of it again in my love of American history. And it is amazing, coming up in just a couple of years, we will be celebrating 250 years of the actual birth of our country. And for those of us who were around at the bicentennial in 1976, that was very patriotic moment, a huge deal. Man, I just lament the divisiveness of our country. I wish it wasn't happening, and I just hope that in 2026 we can have that same kind of celebration. And that's all I'll say about that right now. That is my wish and prayer. Okay, back to one of the things that struck me when I was in Independence Hall, and I was there 30 years ago, but I didn't appreciate it as much back then. But thinking about this great experiment that had no business working, but it did. And there are a number of things that set that early country apart that we're still benefiting from today. And I'm just going to tell you about two, and then one in particular, and its connection to a very tragic story in New York City from the past week. But one of the things that America was different was the elimination, basically, of the so-called caste system, nobility. I don't care what country you were born in back in the day, centuries ago, but if you were born into nobility, you could have been an idiot, and you were going to have it made in life. Didn't matter. I don't care how brilliant you were, but chances are, if you were born a common laborer, if you were born into poverty, if you were born out into some farm field, you were not going to be given the time of day. That's just, it was almost like, well, that's what God wanted for you. Otherwise, you would have been born in a different body in a different place. That's the way it was seen. America was different. Now, was it perfect? And is it perfect today? Of course not. I'm not being Pollyannish here, of course. Some people just have a built-in advantage because of where they're born and what family they're born into. But the barriers, for the most part, are not there, and especially were not there some 250 years ago, 200 years ago, They were still in place everywhere around the world. Foreign observers would come into this country and notice that right off the bat in the early 1800s and go, wow, the common man can actually make something of himself here. It was so unique in world history. That's number one. Number two, and this is a biggie for me. I think it gets overlooked. Property rights. Our very liberty and freedom is based on the fact that we can buy property. We can take the deed. We own that. And the government or no individual has any legal right to come in and take it away. Now, again, not to be Pollyannish, we all know about things like eminent domain, which has been very controversial. You don't, by the way, you don't hear about it as much anymore. I don't know if that is just kind of gone by the wayside for a little bit. It's still out there, but that was always a really big deal for a while. I just hated the fact that, well, we need a new mall. Sorry, half neighborhood, you better sell your homes, or we need a new runway or whatever. You don't hear about it as much. But outside of that, if you're not a drug house, you don't get your house taken away. You can't have your property just seized for no reason. That's a constitutional right we have, the right, property rights. And that's why it is disheartening and maddening to see what's happening in some cities in this country that have decided, no, you don't really don't have those rights anymore as a landlord, as a property owner. Let me give you an example. In New York City last week, while I was in Philadelphia, a woman from Spain, 52-year-old Nadia Vitel, owned some property. I guess it was an apartment or something in New York City that her older mother, her elderly mother, lived in, and she passed away. So that place stayed empty for a while as Nadia, living in Spain, was taking care of business. And then she came to America and started to get everything in order to perhaps rent out that apartment again. She had the keys. She walked into her place that she owned and met a couple of squatters, two New York City bums who decided, no, this is our place now. Now, we don't know yet what was said. They probably surprised each other. We don't know if there was a verbal altercation. We do know that the two squatters beat her to death. 52-year-old Nadia Vitel was alive a week ago. She's not anymore. She died from a blunt object to the head, and her body was found stuffed into a closet in her own place. Just a couple of days ago, they found the two squatters. They had fled. A 19-year-old and a juvenile. You're basically talking about two teenagers. Now, why would I even talk about this and go, what is this about squatters' rights? Those two people, based on the laws in New York, had every right to be there, and you could not throw them out, even if there was not an altercation. And those two said, I don't care who you think you are, and I don't care that you say this is your apartment. You don't have a legal right to throw us out. And they were right. Squatters' rights. Because of some of these politicians and legislators in some of these cities and even in some states have decided that squatters have more rights. And property rights be damned that the founding fathers put in. This really, really is irritating is an understatement here. So I had to do a little bit more checking on this whole thing about New York City. I thought there's just no way that this can be accurate, and it is. In New York, if you call on the police because someone just moved into your house without your permission because you were gone on vacation for a couple of weeks, and they claim your place, they claim to be a tenant, they can't be arrested for trespassing. And instead, the owner has to take them to court to evict them. And the average eviction in the city of New York City takes 2 years to complete. The rule is a 30-day rule. In New York, squatters have rights after 30 days. So that means the property owner cannot change the locks on them. They can't remove their belongings. They can't cut off utilities. And if they do, the owner can be arrested. You think I'm joking? It happened as I did a little bit more research. A homeowner in Queens up there in New York was arrested by police for changing the locks on men that she said were squatting in her home. She went on a long vacation, came back. These couple of guys in there are saying, no, this is our place now. She changed the locks and she was arrested. This is crazy. And I'll give you one more, another suburb of New York. There was a guy, a family actually, built a really nice new home. I don't know where this is. It just says New York. $2 million home, which New York City might be a 12,000 or 1,200 square foot place, but I digress. A $2 million home. They've been unable to move in there, though, because as soon as it was constructed, before the family moved in, squatter went in there, and he refuses to leave, and they can't force him out. Because he's been in there for more than 30 days. So I did some more checking. And I had to find out, well, what is it about Missouri? What do we have? I hope that it's not 30 days. I think we would be hearing this. And it's not, it's 10 years. But in a weird way, that's even strange to say. Well, I don't know what. You own a place, but you don't go there for 10 years. And you show up and somebody says, well, now I own this place because I've been here 10 years. I don't know that that ever happens. But that's the Missouri rule. So, yeah, there has now been a big pushback. Finally, it took someone to die. The update is, as I've been reading some New York City papers, that now legislators up there in New York are saying, okay, this squatter right stuff is over. And the reason why that was even put in was because of supposedly greedy landlords. You would move into an apartment, let's say, or wherever, and they would kick you out, let's say, after a couple weeks because somebody else was willing to pay more for that. And they would say, no, no. As long as you can't do anything for at least 30 days. And so as long as somebody was in there for 30 days and they had every right, or I guess it was after 30 days, you couldn't. That's what it was. If you were in there for, let's say, a month and a half and then you decided to kick someone out as the landlord, you can't do that. You had within 30 days to do so. It's just mind-boggling. And I get back again. The coincidence of going to Philadelphia, going through the founding of the country, be reminding of it, and learning again about property rights, I'm hit with that news going, wow, the founding fathers, what would they say if they saw this in their own backyard in New York City? I think we know. We'll come back with more at your service right after this.
In the know, on the go. Trust KMOX for local news that impacts St. Louis and the region.
It is 8:36 in St. Louis. Dave Simons filling in tonight, certified financial planner and just all-around nice guy. So when we were in Pennsylvania and I was talking to some folks up there, I would say, how does it feel like to be among those few Americans who are going to decide the presidential election this year? They think about it. Well, I guess you're right. Yeah, it's coming down to 7 swing states. Here in Missouri, if you go by what is expected, Missouri will go Trump. Illinois will go Biden. And you just do, you go down all 50 states and District of Columbia, and this is the way that right now it appears to be going. That the presidential race is going to be decided by 7 states, and those 7 states have less than a fifth of the U.S. population. Now, people like to debate the Electoral College. That's really what we're talking about here, as we've referenced already the founding fathers. I think you can make an argument of the importance of it. It has certainly helped Republicans. There's no question about it. I wouldn't think that they would want to give away the Electoral College. If you think about it, go back to 1988 when H.W. won. Since then, and he won the popular vote, he won the Electoral College. Since 1988, so we're talking 36 years, the GOP has only won the Electoral College twice. And I had to go back and look at this. I'm like, wow, is that really accurate? And it is. Because as we know, Clinton won in 92 and 96. George W. Bush won, but he did not win the popular vote. I'm sorry. he won the Electoral College, but yeah, right. He did not win the popular vote. He did win both in 04 as he was reelected. Then you go to 08 and 12. Of course, you have Obama winning both. And then you get to 16, and it's the same thing as in 2000. Donald Trump wins the Electoral College but loses the popular vote. So since 1988, that's a long track record. And I've seen this within the RNC as they have talked about that. And they know they're very razor thin and have been. And they're trying to reach out to other communities to say, hey, we are the party for you. And people can argue, well, is Donald Trump, though, the guy for us? Maybe the party is, and that's another completely other debate. But back to the seven states. This is the kind of stuff that I just love. As it stands right now, Donald Trump is expected to take 24 states worth 219 electoral votes. Joe Biden is expected to take 20 states and the District of Columbia, altogether worth 226 electoral votes. So those are the ones that both men right now are counting on, and few analysts are really arguing with that math. So based on those states, so we're talking 44 states and the District of Columbia. Is that right? 44? I see what we're saying here. Okay. So based on that math, Joe Biden would be leading by a mere 7 electoral votes. So that gets us to the 7 states. What are they? In alphabetical order, they are Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. This is interesting. Trump carried all of them in 2016, except for Nevada. And Nevada doesn't have a ton of electoral votes, so it wasn't a big deal. But then go forward 4 years in 2020, and Trump only took North Carolina. Biden took the other 6. Now, some of them were very, very close. So what's the math say then with those 7 states? Biden needs 45 of those states' electoral votes. Mr. Trump needs 51. Reaching either 3 threshold will require winning at least 3 of the states. So that's pretty much where all of the attention is focused. That's where most of your campaign money is going to be spent from a national level. So the folks who live in the aforementioned 7 states, if they're not inundated yet, it's just going to be wall-to-wall 24/7 ads for both Trump and Biden, because those are going to be the battleground states. Governors, by the way, let's not lose sight of this. Governors are going to really matter in this because they have the political operations already down in the state, if you think about it. The state parties, Republican and Democrats, will be working very, very hard. That's led by their governors. They can get all their supporters mobilized. Well, okay, of the 7, who controls what? Well, Georgia and Nevada have Republican governors. The other 5 states have Democrat governors. Will that make a big difference? I don't know. We'll see. But those 7 states, man, that's going to be very, very interesting to see how that all plays out. And interesting, basically an understatement. I had earlier talked about the bigger issues, of course, right now, based on all the polling. Number 1 is the economy, and that's almost always the case. In this case, attach inflation to that as a subset. Number 2, immigration is almost never in the top 2 or 3. It is up there usually in the top 5 or 6, but now it is some kind of immigration reform. Crime is number 3. But back to the economy for a second, it's that dichotomy. It's that weird conundrum in which we find ourselves to say, well, some people are really hurting because of the cumulative effect of inflation. But on the other hand, we see the economy working and we see that unemployment has stayed under 4% now for 25 months in a row. Do you realize that that's the 3rd longest in recorded history? And if we stay under 4% when the March numbers are released in early April, and then April and May, we get to 28 consecutive months, that will be the 2nd longest in history, only behind the early 1950s, kind of that part of that post World War II boom, and the baby boomers were being born at that time. That's number one, and I think that's way off the charts. That's up at like, what was that, like 48 months in a row, something like that. Not even, nothing's ever come close to that in terms of keeping the unemployment rate below 4%. Well, we're at 3.9% right now. We were at 3.9% back in October. So we've kind of stayed just under four. See if we can make it the second most of all time. Housing is another thing that people feel. It's a palpable thing when it comes to housing. Is it too expensive? In many cases right now, it is. One thing that I have been very public about over the past 6 months to a year is pushing back and all the fear-mongering out there that we had a housing bubble because prices were going way up and this thing was going to crash something akin to the Great Recession. And I always said, that's impossible. Then you don't understand economics 101 about supply and demand. The reason why prices have gone up, even with mortgage rates at 40-year highs, is because there's no supply. So you just have to have a modicum amount of demand, and that was going to push prices up. Well, sure enough, the latest numbers are in, and after having a little weakness in January, which is typical for winter months, but housing starts. I mean, okay, just like the name implies, we're starting to build a house. Rose 10.7% in February. That was higher than expectations of 7.4%. Residential permits. Now, that's kind of a canary in a coal mine. It's a bellwether for future home construction. These are permits. Rose 1.9% to 1.52 million total annual rate. The expectation was 1.49, so that beat it as well. And then on Monday of last week, a measure of home builder confidence, they actually can measure that, rose in March, gaining 4 months in a row now, entering positive territory for the first time since last summer. So we are seeing now, it's almost like the animal spirits are being stirred up again, which is problematic for the Fed because the Fed wants to cut rates. If I were in charge of the Fed, I don't know that I would be wanting to cut rates right now. First of all, people will start calling you, you know, on one side about being a political in nature. You shouldn't be cutting rates and juice the stock market in an election year. Well, what side are you on? So that's part of it. They're not supposed to be swayed by this, but you know, they're only human. They have to take that into account. But the stock market hitting all-time highs, housing market coming back up, everyone's flying everywhere, hotels are booked, restaurants are full, unemployment has stayed under 4%. And you're going to cut rates into that? I do worry about that. Look, I'm like everybody else. I would love rates to be lower too. But not if it's going to stir up inflation again and we pay the price later on down the road. We'll come back and close out this first hour of At Your Service right after this. Welcome back, everybody. This is At Your Service on KMOX. Dave Simons filling in tonight. Well, you know, sometimes I think I'm a halfway smart guy, you know, well-read, educated. And then I come across a guy like Brett Adcock, and I feel like an idiot. The reason I bring up Brett Adcock's name is the fact, two reasons. One, he is proof that the American dream is not dead, which I'll get to in a second. I hate the fact that our young people are being told that. I think it's one of the crimes on social media. I've seen it. TikTok, Instagram, whatever. You can't be what your parents were. That's passed us by. American dream is dead. And it prevents people from investing in themselves. In fact, I'm going to be recording some new podcasts tomorrow that will be released in subsequent weeks. And that's one of the issues that I'm going to address on an upcoming one. And number two is the fact that Brett Adcock is from an area within our listening geographical area here of KMOX. In a very small town that, frankly, I had never heard of, it's only a town of about 1,700 people just south of Decatur, which, of course, I have heard of. But the town is Moequa. I guess that's how you pronounce it. M-O-W-E-A-Q-U-A, Moequa. He was born in 1986. He's about to turn 38 years old. Brett Adcock. I guarantee somebody is listening in this small town going, oh my gosh, they're talking about this, the prodigy from our town here. He was raised on his family's farm just outside that very small town in the late 80s and through the 90s. At the age of 16, just tinkering around at home, working on web companies, including in some e-commerce site that he founded while he was a teenager, focused on outdoor electronics. He made up this content site called Street of Walls. I have no idea what was on there. And so he was kind of having fun, you know, maybe making a little money on the side. He ended up graduating as the valedictorian of his high school. Well, of course he did. He then goes down to the University of Florida, majors in business, graduates with a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration in 08. A few years later, 2013, he founds his first, he comes up with his first real company called Vettery, with a V, Vettery. And it's a talent marketplace that matches job seekers with employers who are looking only for technical expertise. Somehow he comes up with this idea, he comes up with the algorithms, and it works. And it was so successful that a company bought Vettery, get this, for $100 million. Adcock is 32 years old. Again, small rural Illinois kid. Now he's a multimillionaire many times over. Is he done? I think most people would say, I'm 32, I got $100 million. Now, of course, he didn't get all of that, I'm sure. Taxes and all that stuff. But he still have tens of millions, and you say, I think I'm done. Retire early. Nope. Adcock starts another company called Archer Aviation. Get this. It's an electric vertical takeoff and landing taxi service. Not kidding. I looked it up. This is amazing. Other companies are buying this stuff. And this is this kid from Illinois. But the biggie was more recently, and this is what first, why Adcock got on my radar screen when I was reading about this. In 22, so just a couple of years ago, he founded his next new company called Figure. Yeah, just like your figure or figure eight, capital F, Figure. Yes, it's involved in AI, of course, artificial intelligence. It's a new startup. And it's working on, get this, this is kind of scary in a way, reminds me of the movie I, Robot with Will Smith, but he's working on a general-purpose humanoid robot. Brett Adcock from little outside of Milwaukee, Illinois, just south of Decatur, has brought in a team from people working at Boston Dynamics, Tesla, Google, Apple. Wow. So when I came across this story, I thought, oh, this is a great at your service way to kind of end one of the hours. It's a little off topic. I don't know if it's lighthearted, but it's a little different. And I love it again because it shows the greatness of this country and what people can do. I talked about no caste system, and I talked about property rights, and I talked about the American dream, and all those things for the most part are alive and well. And here's a kid from a rural community of just 1,000 people who now is so wealthy, and I'm sure that's not why he chased it. It's because of his smarts and his ability to work hard, and here he is making a huge difference in changing the world. Stay with us. I've got a lot more coming up in the second hour of At Your Service.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.